broadcasting on the Drug Truth Network. This is Cultural Baggage.
It's not only inhumane, it is really fundamentally un-American.
My name is Dean Becker. I don't condone or encourage the use of any drugs, legal or illegal. I report the unvarnished truth about the pharmaceutical, banking, prison, and judicial nightmare that feeds on eternal drug war.
Welcome to this edition of Cultural Baggage. I'm glad you could be with us. Here in just a moment, we're going to bring in our guest for the evening. His name is Bruce Merkin. He's the Director of Information for the Marijuana Policy Project, and there's a lot of news to talk about this week on the marijuana front, and I think without any further ado, let's bring him in, Philip. Hello, Bruce.
Hey, Dean. Glad to be here.
Glad to have you with us, sir. As I was telling our listeners, this has been quite a week on the marijuana front. Why don't you, first off, tell us a little bit about your organization and perhaps your involvement in some of these ballot initiatives.
Sure. Well, the Marijuana Policy Project is the largest national marijuana policy reform organization in the U.S. We're headquartered in Washington, D.C., and we have about 19,000 members all across the country. And as you hinted at, we were heavily involved in the effort that just succeeded this week to pass a medical marijuana law in the state of Rhode Island. And we've been in some suspense waiting for the legislature to reconvene because it passed both houses last year, was promptly vetoed by the governor. The Senate immediately overrode the veto, but the House recessed without taking action. So now they reconvened on Tuesday, and before beginning the new 2006 session as the first order of business, they voted by 59-13 to override the governor's veto. Just to give you an idea of how overwhelming that was, they needed 60% of the votes on the floor, or 44, to override, and they got 59. So this was pretty breathtaking.
Indeed, Bruce. I think it's a phrase I've been using here around the station today. It's a little bit of a sign to John Walters, in your face, buddy. I mean, I think that's a lot of what was being said there.
Well, I do think it was, and for listeners who may not know what we mean by that, John Walters is, of course, the White House drug czar, and last June, when the Supreme Court ruled, unfortunately, that despite the existence of state medical marijuana laws, federal authorities could still come into those states and arrest patients, Walters put out a statement proclaiming that that was the end of medical marijuana as a political issue. Well, I got news for Mr. Walters. He wasn't quite right.
Well, you know, I have tried numerous times to get John Walters or anyone from the Office of National Drug Control Policy to be our guest here on the Cultural Baggage Show. I tried six different ways. Quite seriously, it's online.
Let me guess. They don't want to talk to you, Dan?
No, and I would imagine you guys have had similar results.
Well, indeed, we have publicly asked him and challenged him to debate, you know, which started a couple of years ago. You may remember in Seattle they had a vote on a local initiative to make marijuana prosecutions the lowest priority for law enforcement. Walters went there to campaign against it. Of course, he said he wasn't campaigning, but it sure looked like campaigning. And he said at the time, let's have a national debate about legalizing marijuana. So we said, okay, Mr. Walters, you're on. When would you like to debate? And mysteriously, they never answered us.
I don't think there's that big a mystery. There's a lot of, I'm not going to play politics with it. They have their reasons. I'll just leave it at that. You know, in that he won't debate us either here on the airways or with you, but maybe out of college or something. Wednesday, he was on C-SPAN, that early morning call-in show, and I was able to capture a little bit of that. So let's give him a chance. Let's hear a little bit from John Walters.
Trenton, Tennessee, on our line for Republicans. Good morning.
Mr. Walters, it's unbelievable that you sit there and lie about how our drug wars help our nation. What's it going to take to get some truth out of our politicians over this draconian drug war that you're suppressing our citizens with and all the lies about the cannabis? Nobody's ever died of cannabis. When are you going to get some sense?
Well, again, this is, I think, an example of reefer madness, as I call it, of the view that that marijuana is the kind of safe drug. It's not a problem of substance. It is true that it's not toxic in a way that some other drugs, heroin, cocaine, methamphetamine, are toxic. People don't have overdose deaths. But as I pointed out, of the 7 million people we estimate we have to treat nationwide because of their dependence or abuse of all illegal drugs, over 60% are dependent as a primary dependency on marijuana. And that should be striking to your audience and to others, that the one area where people, nobody defends alcoholism, but the one thing that people will call up and defend is marijuana abuse. And I think you've got to ask yourself, you know, whether or not that doesn't indicate that we have to do a better job of telling our young people, this is also a dangerous substance of abuse, and the fact that you may get, you know, entertainment messages that are irresponsible here, or you may get others if you look on the internet, or you get hear people make comments, I think you've got to remind them that this is not a casual matter. And just as we care about cigarettes, underage drinking, we have to care about marijuana consumption, and we have to care about illegal drug use. And we have to do a better job, I think, of not living in the past. And the best thing we can do is to stop young people before they start, and that begins by telling them the truth about the dangers.
The truth about the dangers. Your thoughts on that one thought there?
Oh, gosh, there is so much in that little blurb.
Yes.
You know, John Walters is hardly somebody to lecture anybody about telling the truth. His office has produced some of the most consistently misleading and dishonest advertisements, both directed at kids and directed at their parents, that any organization I've ever seen, including political campaigns, have done. And they had a large newspaper ad that ran all over the country a couple months ago, telling people that marijuana had four times the cancer risk of tobacco. That was a flat-out lie. In fact, there's a whole lot of data that shows that there's no increased risk of lung cancer or other smoking-related cancers in people who smoke marijuana and don't smoke tobacco. You know, it was interesting. He says, we have to care. Well, yeah, we do have to care. We do have to give kids accurate information. And did you notice how he sort of slyly compared any marijuana use to alcoholism?
Well, right, and called all of it abuse, of course.
Right. He simply refuses to acknowledge the possibility that just as many, many millions of people use alcohol responsibly and sanely and not in a way that's harmful, so do millions of people use marijuana in a similar responsible way. Now, yeah, there are people who get into trouble with alcohol or marijuana or lots of other substances, and those folks should have help. Nobody's arguing that. The other thing I just gotta say is he threw out this number of 7 million people that they say need treatment, which is an entirely arbitrary claim on their part, and that 60% are dependent on marijuana. Well, what they talk about is definitions of quote-unquote abuse that include, among other things, repeated legal difficulties. So, you know, the fact that you've been arrested for marijuana means, according to Mr. Walters' criteria, you need treatment. Well, no, maybe you just need to change some stupid laws.
Absolutely. And, you know, they are slowly backing away from this embargadero here, I believe. Even Mr. Walters, this is the first time I heard him say it, that it is not toxic, you know, that it doesn't lead to overdose. Because he's often kind of inferred that in, I think, every other incantation he's done.
Well, you know, every once in a while, something is so obviously true that they can't really deny it. And, you know, he sort of makes that out to be unimportant. But, you know, I mean, let's compare drugs for a second here. The most commonly used pain reliever that most people think of as entirely benign is Tylenol, the active ingredient acetaminophen. Kills about 500 Americans a year through overdose deaths by basically frying your liver. Now, I think that's important. If you're one of those people who's dead or one of their families, it's sure important. You can't do that with marijuana. You literally cannot fatally OD, and yet he wants to tell us that it's too dangerous for even cancer patients to use as a medicine. I mean, give me a break.
Well, you know, it's a shame that more studies haven't been conducted. The Food and Drug Administration, though, is now going to allow a phase 3 study here in the United States of a cannabis-based whole plant extract named Sativex, manufactured by GW Pharmaceuticals out of Great Britain. And I think that sort of breaks the back of their framing that there is no legitimate, you know, medical association or governmental body that recognizes marijuana.
Well, you know, the federal government is having to do a really interesting dance on this question of, by the way, I've never been sure if the correct pronunciation is Sativex or Sativex.
Well, the founder, Jeffrey Guy, told me Sativex. I think that's a British pronunciation.
Okay. Well, you know, the Brits are funny anyway, but I'm in the habit of saying Sativex, so even if it's not right, forgive me, anybody out there. But anyway, Sativex, as you mentioned, is a whole plant extract made from natural marijuana plants. It is now approved in Canada for treatment of pain associated with multiple sclerosis. And it is now going to be studied in the United States, and the company has produced a good amount of data showing that the stuff is safe and effective in certain patients. And the FDA can't really not let it go forward. And yet, as you mentioned, you know, this is essentially liquid marijuana, although the company doesn't really want to talk about it that way because they think it'll hurt them politically. But it is. And if Sativex is medicine, then it becomes insane to say that marijuana in herbal form is not. But it seems like what the tack the government is going to take is to say, well, you can get it in this very expensive little bottle from a pharmaceutical company, and that's okay. But this is somehow different than growing the plants in your backyard. And that's a distinction without a difference. You know, if people prefer the pharmaceutical product and their insurance company wants to pay for it, fine, let them. You know, people should have all the options that science can give them, particularly people who are suffering. But, you know, there's a former White House official named Andrea Barthwell, who's now working for GW Pharmaceuticals, who claimed that the difference between marijuana and Sativex is that Sativex is like a fire in your furnace, and marijuana is like a raging forest fire. And that's just crazy. Because if you read the patient instructions approved by the Canadian government for Sativex, it says explicitly, you can take as much as you want.
And yet, they continue with the propaganda campaign. Now, I've also heard it said that if, you know, this Sativex is a legitimate product, and marijuana is not, that's like saying that vitamin C in a capsule is a good product, but vitamin C in an orange is illegal.
Well, you know, that's exactly right. And you know, you hear from the what I call the drug war addicts that marijuana is bad because it contains 400 different chemicals, and, you know, we can't measure exactly what they are. Well, you know, you could say that about oranges or broccoli or any number of other things that most people would regard as pretty healthy.
Yeah. We're getting there. Slowly the truth is emerging from this reefer madness. You know, it's often said by the drugs are, and I mentioned it earlier, there are no legitimate medical concerns, and yet the truth be told, there are well over 100 nationally, internationally recognized medical bodies who are either for further studies or for the legitimate use of medical marijuana. And one such person who will be our guest next week is Nurse Mary Lynn Mathry, and she and her husband Al Byrne founded Patients Out of Time, and I got a chance to talk with her a little bit earlier this week. Let's go ahead and play that clip.
Mary Lynn Mathry. I'm a registered nurse of more than 30 years, interested in therapeutic cannabis, president and co-founder of Patients Out of Time. We founded that in 1995, an organization of healthcare professionals, patients, some of them being the legal patients for medical marijuana, basically formed to educate healthcare professionals and the public about the therapeutic use of cannabis in hopes that if we educate enough people, we'll finally get it back in the pharmacopoeia.
Well, you know, Mary Lynn, the thing is, maybe it's been paying off because there's been some astounding news this week. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration has approved a clinical trial of that marijuana medicine, Sativex. What's your thoughts on that?
You're right. It's been an excellent week. I think it's absolutely wonderful. I know GW Pharmaceuticals has been working hard to try to get something in the United States going, and something's happening. The fact that clinical trials are going to happen, phase three clinical trials, basically mean that they're going to actually be doing these studies on people with the condition. If it's specifically multiple sclerosis, I'm not sure. But it does mean it'll be looking at patients to see if this actually is helpful. That's really big news because it's basically saying maybe there is some merit to cannabis. They're finally acknowledging it.
Well, I know that you've been much involved with the American Nurses Association and several of the state nurses associations who have called for studies, who have called for the use of medical marijuana. John Walters just has been off base on this, has he not?
Exactly. John Walters, with as far as the drug czar's office, it's been amazing how they've been fighting it between the drug czar's office and the DEA, trying to interfere with the compassion clubs that are trying to supply medical marijuana to the patients in states where they've passed the laws. Just seems like they've been going overboard to go after patients. And then now, finally, the scientific community, on the other hand, at the federal level, is saying, okay, let's look at this. There is some evidence. And clearly, GW's clinical trials in England have shown that already, that it's very effective for multiple sclerosis patients and other patients with chronic pain. So it'll be interesting to watch what happens and how they maneuver between the different offices under the federal government. One saying no therapeutic value and the other saying, gee, let's look at this.
Okay, once again, you are listening to Cultural Baggage on the Drug Truth Network. Our guest for this evening is Bruce Merkin. He's the Director of Information for the Marijuana Policy Project. Bruce, we got just a couple minutes left, and I want to give you the opportunity to once again talk about your organization, the Marijuana Policy Project. You guys are on the web at mpp.org. And you guys are making great progress. If folks would like to get involved, if they'd like to help their community make some changes in this regard, tell them what you guys can offer.
Well, probably the simplest thing that folks can do is log on to our website, again, mpp.org, and you can very easily sign up for email alerts that will get you information about items coming up that your elected representatives are going to be voting on, both on the national level and things in your state too, and we'll let you know about those as they come up, and make it very easy for you to contact your elected officials, your members of Congress, or your state legislators, whoever's involved, and get them a message that you want them to do the right things to protect patients, to stop this insane war on responsible marijuana users. Obviously, folks who are inclined can also go on the web and use that to make a contribution or help in other ways. We really, really do need bodies, people calling, people writing. Politicians are a strange breed, Dan. And,
yes,
they still believe. I mean, let's just take the medical marijuana issue alone. Okay, there are surveys now going back a couple of decades showing that the public supports legal access to medical marijuana. The most recent national survey is a national Gallup poll came out in November showing 78% support. That's pretty consistent with the way it's been running for years. And yet, members of Congress still think that it's politically dangerous for them to support this. It makes no sense, but they need to hear really loudly, really clearly from their constituents. It's the only thing that's going to change it.
Well, with that, we'll have to wrap it up for this time. You know I'll be calling on you soon. We'll be talking about Maryland and Nevada and many of the other states that are taking bold steps in this direction. Thank you,
Bruce. All right. Thank you.
It's time to play Name That Drug by Its Side Effects.
depression, hopelessness, hallucinations, suicide, seizures, fatal blood disorders, hypotension, fatal myocarditis, physical collapse, and cardiac arrest. Time's up. The answer for schizophrenia, Clozaril from Novartis Laboratories.
Hello, this is Judge Jim Gray from the Superior Court in Orange County, California. I'm the author of the book, Why Our Drug Laws Have Failed and What We Can Do About It, a judicial indictment on the war on drugs. And you are listening right now to the Drug Truth Network with Dean Becker.
When the Office of National Drug Control Policy was established, one of its primary missions was to survey anti-drug efforts being undertaken by the various agencies of government so that it could create a budget and develop a strategy. From the late 80s through the 1990s, we watched the federal drug war grow from a few billion to over $20 billion annually, with most of the money going to law enforcement. Then, John Walters became drug czar in the G.W. Bush administration. Complaints about rising costs, coupled with constant failure, created a new imperative. Also, auditors and consultants had raised concerns about the report itself, as it understated law enforcement spending and overstated money being spent on prevention and treatment by including funds devoted to anti-alcohol and anti-violence programs. So, Walters had his bean counters change the way they measured the federal drug war. They ignored the actual recommendations of their consultants, as following that advice would have made the situation appear either worse or more realistic, depending on your perspective. Now, billions in law enforcement-related spending are no longer reported. It's as if a corporate accountant decided to ignore the losses from a money-losing division. Think Enron or WorldCom. The next annual reports will be issued in 1 to 2 months. For the Drug Truth Network, this is Doug McVeigh, editor of DrugWarFacts.org.
Poppygate, bizarre news about the U.S. policy on controlling heroin, featuring Glenn Greenway.
Since the U.S. invasion in 2001, Afghanistan's annual heroin production has increased from less than 20 to over 500 tons, and cultivation has expanded from 6 to all 32 Afghan provinces. Britain's The Guardian cynically calls Poppygate the, quote, most successful agricultural program of all time, end quote, and warns that combating heroin use by heavy-handed eradication tactics is like combating traffic by bombing oil wells. The Washington Post reports that U.S. aid for Afghan reconstruction is set to be nearly cut in half in 2006. The current issue of Newsweek features an article entitled, A Harvest of Treachery, which implicates both the Afghan drug czar and the Afghan president's brother in narco-trafficking. Beverly Henry, serving a 15-year sentence for selling $20 worth of heroin in California, describes in the Baltimore Sun her work on a prison assembly line sewing American flags. This is Glenn Greenway reporting for the Drug Truth Network.
This is Phil Smith from the Drug War Chronicle with this week's corrupt cop story for the Drug Truth Network. This week we're going to San Francisco, where we have the story of a cop as much sleazy as corrupt. San Francisco police officer Michael Turkington, age 35, was arrested December 22nd on drug, sex, and false imprisonment charges for forcing himself on an 18-year-old woman while he was on duty. Prosecutors say Turkington befriended a San Francisco State University student, forced her to perform oral sex on him in his patrol car, then gave her marijuana in an apparent attempt to placate her. Turkington faces charges of false imprisonment, oral copulation, distribution of marijuana, and committing those crimes while on duty. It's something of a pattern for Turkington. Last week he went on trial on charges of taking three 16- and 17-year-old girls to Sunset Park last year and plying them with a bottle of vodka, although no sexual misconduct is alleged in that case. In yet another incident that is pending trial, he gave the same girls confiscated fireworks and more vodka. As always, there are more corrupt cop stories this week. Check them out online at www.stopthedrugwar.org.
It's time we discuss an ugly myth constantly championed by drug legalization advocates. I'm talking about the idea that the drug war is inherently racist, that every cop, every district attorney, every government official that doesn't want a crack rock section in their local supermarket is David Duke. Enough already. Now it's an irrefutable fact that while black people only make up approximately 14% of marijuana users, they account for nearly a third of all marijuana arrests. Now you might be asking, how could this be? Is the DEA the KKK? Or is it something else? Perhaps the police are more concentrated in poor urban areas where, due to poverty, not race, more crime is present. You can bet that if the police patrolled the suburbs like they do the inner city, you would see a lot more white arrests. But that doesn't happen, because the disproportionate amount of crime in the inner city requires a disproportionate amount of police, which results in the disproportionate amount of arrests. The bigot drug war myth is a clever distortion concocted by drug legalization advocates designed to trick you into helping them forward their agenda. Don't believe their lies. This has been Winston Francis with the official Government Truth.
Ignorance is bliss. Ignorance is bliss. Ignorance is bliss. Ignorance is bliss.
I know nothing. Nothing.
But what do you know, my friends? You know it's time to end this drug war. We have the truth, the facts, the evidence, the fortitude, the morals, the compulsion, the need to do so. Do you have courage? Do you have the courage necessary to help make the change? Well, somebody who does is our Drug Truth Network reporter, Mr. Tony King.
Incarceration is not a means of rehabilitation. It doesn't help in any shape, form, or fashion. And the system out there of understanding is a better system than the system of reprimands and locking people up and doing things to people. Hitting people in the wallet's not going to do anything. You're hitting the people in the wallet that are out there. A lot of people aren't even involved with this directly. But you're all paying for it, every one of you, taking people's lives and ripping families apart and screwing things up. Yeah, there's a reason for having prisons, but it's not because people have done drugs. It's not because people have made mistakes in their lives, and then they've been marked and got this X in the back.
One more minute for your call.
And this is Tony King from North Texas Intermediate Sanction Facility, hoping that people will open their eyes and their ears, get up, stand up, and do something about making a change in this state. We got to start somewhere, and Texas is the place to get it started. We are considered, in the State of the Unions, the prison state. And this is a joke and a fiasco.
Judge William Wayne Justice, where are you, sir? We need you to come back. We need you to bring in the FBI. We need you to look at the prison system and the county jail system in this state. Mr. Tony King was due to get out of the Harris County Jail on December 26th, and yet all his probation officers did was hand him off one to the other, one to the other. No one signed his paperwork. He was then, because the Harris County Jail couldn't bill for him being there any longer, they sent him back to the state. He was sent to North Texas. They're still working on the paperwork. It's being passed from one desk to another, back and forth, and the word is that maybe Tony will get out in another week. Meantime, you and I paid thousands of our tax dollars to house Tony and to haul him around the state. When he gets out of jail, we're going to bring him in here, and we're going to give this a good thrashing, my friends. I want to welcome station number 50 to the Drug Truth Network, CHMA 106.9 FM in Sackville, New Brunswick, Canada. Welcome, my friends. Working together, we will bring this to an end much sooner, I would hope. It's up to you, my friends. It really is. When are we going to end this? When you've had enough. When you decide to write that 50-word letter, send it to your congressman, to your local paper. When you decide to step up to the plate and be courageous like Tony King, sitting in the county, the state facility at this point in time. You know, you can learn more by visiting our website at endprohibition.org. You can hear all our shows at drugtruth.net. And as always, I have to remind you, my friends, because of drug prohibition, you don't know what's in that bag, and I urge you to please be careful.
To the Drug Truth Network listeners around the world, on behalf of engineer Philip Guffey, this is Dean Becker for Cultural Baggage and the Unvarnished Truth. The show produced at the Pacifica Studios of KPFT, Houston.
Jap dancing on the edge of an abyss.